Martin, you might like to continue on in this conversation, because you're on the farm and you would have seen whether there's any signs, which there obviously wasn't, of the farm going backwards, because Bruce is only putting out his worm liquids and his fish fertiliser. So, Martin, would you like to explain how you see things are going on the farm?
Yeah, the worm juice and the fish fertiliser, the fermented fish offal that Bruce uses, those factors give food for the bugs in the soil to start working again. And it's the local biology that is then kick-started with that special food. And the management, of course, has to be such that the management then doesn't kill all those organisms again. And that's what Bruce and Heidi have in control, to remove cattle and not have them grazing for too long. That keeps the whole cycle going. And the issue, why I like to go to farms like from Bruce and Heidi, is that Bruce and Heidi have biosensitivity. They sense the biology, they feel the biology, and they act accordingly. So and they're not inhibited by past doctrines that you have to see this or you have to do that, you have to apply fertilizers. If you don't do that, you're bad. They have the patience then to work with the biological inputs, like from the worms and the fish, and then with the management, encourage that soil biology to start working. And then they see the results. And like after rain, you see the paddock going green very quickly, quicker than it did before. And those are all encouraging signs to keep doing what you're doing. And then as you see new things happening, you learn from that. So you start to raise your expectation each time from what can happen next. And it's that biosensitivity that we have to encourage to be learning to in all farms again. Because our farming has become too mechanized over the last decades, the last two generations, increasingly mechanized. And that mechanized thinking is completely against biology, because mechanized thinking, 1 and 1 is 2, it can never be 3. But in biological thinking, 1 and 1 can be 3. It's the synergy, the incredible outcomes of two products that can be far better results than we can expect. 1 and 1 can be 3 in biology. Because if everything is right, it all clicks together and bang, you get an incredible outcome. But you can only get that if you have like 15,000 microbes in your soil working. Because each of those microbes have their own tasks, like what Bruce was saying about the low minerals, some trace elements not available in the paddocks, and you should fertilize that because otherwise plants can't grow. But they're always, those minerals are in the soil, but they're not available. And each mineral has to be made liquid, liquefied, solubilized by a special microbe that makes an enzyme to make the mineral soluble. So for each of those trace elements and for each of those tasks in the system, we need a special microbe. And then not one. Now, for each task, we need like 10 different species, subspecies, because each of them acts in a different environment, wet and cold and all these different aspects of the weather pattern and the conditions of salt and acidity and all these aspects. And together, they create an environment for the plant that the plant can grow happy and healthy all the time, because there's always one species that can help the plant, and that's happening. So that's what we then call a sustainable system. And of course, that always happens like in our natural systems, in the forests and nature parks, savannas, etc. And then people said, oh, as we started cropping with monocultures, that was the problem, because monocultures are not nature and we can't do that. And like 15, 20 years ago, I was in India listening to a professor who was saying those things, that we can't do monocultures in agriculture. But now I've reversed from that, because we can do monoculture crops and pastures, we need a diverse pasture with like 15, 20 species, if not more, 30 species, 60 species. The more we have, the better, because they can feed the plants, the animals, in such a way that the animal can always stay happy. But in our cropping, we don't have to go to multi-species cropping, because it's the diversity in the soil that's the most important part. And as we sequence our crops on the surface, we keep that biology in the soil active all the time. And then, of course, cropping by itself, the drier the area, the more bare soil we have in continuous cropping. We need that mixed farming as the best way in cropping, that there are animals on the property that can recycle the carbon, recycle the stubbles, etc. And then we crop. But in continuous cropping, of course, then we need to use green manures and cover crops in between two crops whenever it rains to keep the soil growing with green plants and feeding the biology in the soil for the next crop. And of course, Bruce and I work with the animals. But that area has been cropped vegetables, I think, before as well, Bruce, that there were peas and things that farmers in the past grew in your area of Kendallow. But of course, in the past, there's been dairy farming as the big outcome. But we have to go back to the real diversity in the soil, the organisms in the soil, to get that stability and to get all the minerals made soluble for the plants to take up over the animals. They eat all those different minerals so the animals are healthy and happy and they don't get diseases. And Bruce, you got that very good example of the drought, the big drought a couple of years ago when all the animals were dying in the district mm-hmm. for the drought and you had this very good result.
Yes, yes. Yeah. When you were here, I think about 16 weeks ago, or 14 weeks ago, I think, in mid-July, we had undertaken an experiment. When the drought broke, the grass grew so fast the cattle couldn't possibly eat it, and we allowed it to grow for two reasons. One was we didn't think that the rain was going to continue after an extended period of drought. You tend to lose confidence that it's going to rain. The other thing was I wanted to see what the residual effect was of what we'd been doing. And since you were here, I've decided that I should have kept putting worm juice on and I should have kept the grass shorter. And I've now sprayed the entire farm again. And with the bit of rain we've had, I'm confident that if you came back today, you would not think you were on the same piece of land. It's completely green right across. And an older farmer here, he's in his 80s, been here all his life, said to me not long ago that he can't ever recall seeing this piece of land looking like it does today. And he's a fairly keen observer, a dairy farmer. And a few of the other farmers have said to me that obviously, what we're doing is working because of what they see happening on the land, especially during a drought. So clearly now there's a fair bit of talk in the district that what we're doing is appearing to work. And other conversation is the fact that we're not spending money on fertilizer and herbicides, which means we need a lot less land to
continue on. Yeah, the both of you keep continue on, sorry.
Yep. Yeah, so yeah, the outcome of that is that you don't need as much land to have a viable agricultural operation. And the more we improve the health of the soil, the more sustainable it becomes. This district is, compared to many regions in Australia, would be regarded as steep land. It's undulating land, but generally it's very steep. I was surprised when we first started looking to buy a farm down here at the gradients that were being cultivated. Being at that time farming in the Sydney water catchment, where it's not allowed to cultivate any land greater than 14 degrees slope, seeing what was cultivated down here, I was quite astounded because it was so steep. Here they basically cultivate it if it doesn't have rocks. And the result of that for generations is that there's been a great deal of erosion.
That's like improving pastures, Bruce.
Say again?
That's improving pastures.
Well, yes, supposedly, yes. Yeah, I think what's not taken into consideration is that the loss of fertility in the process of trying to improve the pasture They cultivate, degrade the land, and then try and grow crops that require high fertility soil that has a continuous high level of soil moisture. And again, this particular area in the Bega Valley, historically, and our weather system hasn't changed. I've got the record since 1887. And we have very long periods of very low rainfall with several wet periods each year. And it's been like that continuously. So we don't have continuous year-round humidity. So when we manage, we have to be very conscious of that fact that, you know, if you cultivate and you plant renovate a soil or plant a crop, there's a very high probability that it may fail through the lack of moisture.
Yeah, and that's one issue. Like on the dairy farms I've been here in Australia, on the east coast and the south coast, it's always amazing in all those dairy farms that you see like the ryegrass having root systems like of 1.5 inch, 2 inch if you're lucky. And in that situation, and then pouring on the nitrogen fertilizer all the time after grazing, in that situation then farmers want to have better ryegrass, and then the breeding world gives ryegrass that's stronger, and you have to resow a new ryegrass variety because this variety is better. And we always go to those new genes, new varieties for solving a problem. But like with our biological farming, and Bruce and Heidi are proving that all the time, that if you stimulate the soil biology and you adjust your management, that you get the biology active in the soil, and then that biology in the soil makes each gene that we currently have far more productive.
Yes, stimulate what we already have, because it's worked for millions of years. We've only been here for a fleeting moment, and all of a sudden that system, for some reason, doesn't work anymore. Seems rather odd to me. I think nature's a step ahead of us.
One of the extraordinary things, Bruce, that you have told me in the past is that... I'll say it differently. In conventional agriculture, there's a term that's been bandied around that if you don't put out basically the NPK and maybe a bit of lime, if you're lucky, that you're mining the soil. But what you people have just said, that the biological process doesn't mine the soil. And you can prove that, Bruce, by the condition of your animals. So can you just describe the condition of your animals? And Martin, you might like to step in too as to how that Bruce is not mining the soil.
Yeah, that's an interesting comment, Hugo, because the statement that we're mining the soil is 100% the opposite. The conventional system is actually mining the soil. And that's evidenced by the decline in soil organic matter and soil carbon historically. Whereas now farming biologically, the soil organic matter and soil carbon is actually increasing, which is clear evidence that we're actually rebuilding the soil. And it's 100% the opposite of what convention tells us. And convention is, in fact, the mining system.
Right. So, Martin, would you like to sort of finish off on that subject?
Yes, it's in our current farming, the modern farming, because we look at all these problems as single factors and try to solve a single factor, then that single factor has less and less players to make something better. And if we go back to the whole system, then that whole system starts to support itself, and it makes things available. And of course, there are situations in soils where we would have, because we export compared with nature, and that's what current farming experts are always saying, we export produce from the property, so we have to put all that stuff that we export back in the soil. But if we look at the total amounts of everything that we export, they are incredible numbers in the soil. It just has to become available. And then there are situations, of course, that some minerals are less available. And then we can use like mineral fertilizers, like crushed basalt rocks and the lime and gypsum in small amounts, to bring those minerals back in the property as a broadcast on the land. And of course, also in situations that some minerals are out of balance, and whenever we have things out of balance, like potassium dominating or iron dominating, aluminium dominating, then other minerals are then not available. And that's like the antagonistic way of mineral availability in the soil. If one is dominant, others become deficient. So in that world, when we have a difficult soil, we can then play with mineral inputs to redress that imbalance. And as soon as we get the balance right, then the plants keep maintaining that balance themselves. So it's not a year in, year out, always putting those inputs in, but it's just resetting the start. Because that, in my learning, that has been the biggest eye-opener, that like in nature, everything goes slow. It's a slow adaption of the new system. And Bruce and I have seen that on their property, that as you do the management right, it goes slowly, but then you apply like worm juice and the fish, fermented fish, then it goes a lot quicker because you get support troops. And if the minerals are out of balance, if we redress that mineral imbalance, in that first year we get incredible crop growth, and because we get incredible plant growth, those plants pump carbon in the soil, they activate the biology, and then the biology knows what to do, and they keep doing it. So it's that change of habits that we need in a biological system to get the whole system going a lot quicker, better.
Yeah, totally agree. I think something that's probably worthy of mention, is, which people tend, certainly in convention, they tend to overlook, is that this planet is made of mineral rock, and the biology that's evolved on it has evolved around the natural balance of that mineral rock. So the mineral structure of the soil cannot be out of balance. It's just the availability that is out of balance, and all we need to do is stimulate the biology and then harvest, if you like, that available minerals at a level that the microbial biomass can sustain. If we want to produce more, then we have to feed the biomass more, the microbial biomass more, to provide what we're trying to extract. So it's really a mathematical equation, if you like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like in the last 100 years with our modern farming, we have killed so much of the biology, and we keep killing a lot of the biology with fertilizer inputs and chemical inputs. And like in nature, like 95% of the soil biology is beneficial organisms that support plants and protect plants against insects and diseases. And that's a system that naturally evolved because like those beneficial organisms in the soil, they know that if they protect the plant and they feed the plant, they make minerals available and feed it to the plant. That plant becomes strong, it makes seeds, and the seeds of that plant next year are again strong plants, and the microbes in the soil are then fed by those plants all the time. So they know if we protect the plant and we feed the plant, next year we have a living, our descendants have a living as well. So 5% of the soil organisms that are parasites, like they, because the 95% beneficial organisms, they are fed by the plants. The plants leak sugars into the soil to feed those organisms. So they can get the great diversity and do all the tasks that we need in the soil for the plant to be strong and healthy. But 5% are like pathogens. They can't get fed by the plants, so they have to take the food themselves. And they have evolved in a way that they can't attack a plant that's strong and healthy because they are protected by the beneficials. They take the plants that are weak and not well protected and out of balance. And so they are garbage collectors. They take the plants that are not good for us to eat and for animals to eat.
Indeed, that's their job.
And that system in nature was so strong. And like in my science world, when I made that statement in the seminar like 7 years ago, then at question time, I was questioned by my colleagues because they said, oh, you haven't proven that by science. I said, well, we don't have to prove that with science because if that was not the case, we humans would not be here on planet Earth.
Exactly.
Because those parasites could have taken all the plants all the time, all the diseases, all the insects, all the pests could have taken all the plants all the time. Why did they stop eating? Because they came to plants that were protected, that were strong and healthy. And those plants made seed, and that created again the self-selection of plants that are strong and are not eaten and attacked by parasites. So, and now Bruce and Heidi and all the biological farms are on that track to restore that principle, and they get great results, as we hear and as we saw on the DVD. It's an incredible way of proving, and we don't need the science to confirm that because we see it with our own eyes.
Exactly. The evidence is in the landscape. If you can't see what's happening out in the paddock simply because there aren't numbers attached to it, then you're really not engaged in the subject. It's been my comment to many agronomists that have been here who want the data, the figures. So if you can't see it in the landscape, then perhaps you should seek another vocation because the evidence is right before you. Doesn't need numbers attached to it.
Right. Look, at the moment, if there is anyone on the line and wants to ask a question, as a guest that is, just press *7 and we'll start talking. So you don't have to be invited to talk. And at this stage, Helen's got a couple of questions, so I'll put those to you. Dave,